This is 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's June 7th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my lovely co-host, Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please call or text at 860-486-9487. Or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. And you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. So here we go. Starting out, I have guests today, which is really exciting. We'll get to that in a moment. I'm going to start out with on the positive side. And on the positive side today is going to be special thanks to Fran Storch for covering for me last week. So that was really nice of Fran to do that. And she had a very interesting show, as she always does. She's, she's a bike nut just like I am. So big shout out to Franny for doing that. I really appreciate that. On the second note of on the positive side, there has been a little bit of a talk out there lately about changing some of our laws on bicycle driver's manual type information. And the Massachusetts Department of Transportation Registry of Motor Vehicles just added a new bicycle safety advice to the Massachusetts driver's manual, and it's called the Dutch Reach. And the Dutch Reach is really interesting. This is something that is practiced over in Europe, and drivers reach across. Don't take this the wrong way, Fran. I can see you over there laughing at me. Drivers reach across their bodies and open the car door with their right hand, not their left hand.
When you said Dutch reach, we just started thinking things.
You're just keep it simple here.
You know, okay? Amsterdam, Holland is a very liberal place.
I understand that, but that's not where we're going here. That's not where we're going. The simple movement forces the driver to turn left, scanning the side view mirror or looking out the window to look behind the vehicle before opening the door. What a brilliant idea. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. So anyway, that's the Dutch Reach. And the Massachusetts is great because they are paying attention to this. My good friend, Mr. Richard Fries, who is the head of the coalition up in Massachusetts, he's pushing this through. It's a great thing. Anyway. Big shout out to them. Very good. I'm going to do something a little bit off here because I'm going to introduce my guest before introducing the rant of the week. Okay. And normally I would go right to the rant, but because my rant was brought to me by my two guests, I thought this might be a good thing to do. So my guests today are John Satter and Peter LaValle from Nirac Earth Cycling Club, which is really exciting. They're like our neighbors, and they are these really active people, and they promote a bunch of stuff. And good morning, John.
Good morning. Good morning, Ron.
It's nice to have you here. And good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Ron.
Great. So I'm gonna go right to the rant, and then I'll go back to some other things that we'll discuss. But I ask all my guests this. If you have something you particularly want to rant about, then let me know and we'll talk about it and we'll put it on there. So you had two. You couldn't just leave it alone. There are two of you, so we have to have two rants.
Right.
And I'm not gonna try to get either of you to own up as to which one is which rant, okay? But we'll just open up the discussion right now. The first one you have here is minimum fundraising for charity cycling events. Now that's interesting. Who wants to comment?
I'll start. You know, okay. Nothing annoys me more than when you're going to do a charity cycling event. You know, you go to the registration page, you pay your registration fee, and then they slip in this little thing that says, oh, by the way, you're going to have to raise, a minimum of anywhere from $50 to $2,000, $3,000.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, if it's a big one, like $2,000 or $3,000, they're going to whack your visa.
Well, yeah, and the interesting thing is you go to a thing like Pan Mass Challenge, it's priced itself so high. I mean, I know it raises money for Dana-Farber, and it's a really good thing, but I just don't know how people can afford to do it anymore because it's in the many thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I just think that the promoters of the event should really be probably trying to get sponsors more so than the participants, because you're limiting your cyclists to what they're going to be able to participate in.
Right. And I work with an event, the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which also has a fundraising category there, too. And they are, you know, we've had this discussion a lot because, you know, some people just want to do the ride. Just, you know, give me a fee to pay and I'll do the ride. And so what we came up with there was something that's a fairly reasonable donation that you can make, and then and along with the entry fee. And then it's not so bad. And I think if you can keep it down to a minimum and keep it comfortable, it's okay. But I know, you know, boy, Pan Mass Challenge is a classic.
I would love to do that ride, but I don't, because it's such a high fundraising.
It's,
you know, there's a few of them out
enormous.
There like that.
Yeah.
It's tough because you'd like to do it, you'd like to support it, but you just can't afford it.
Right.
Well, and it also depends on what kind of job you have and what kind of lifestyle you have. I mean, for me, you know, I'll put out a can at the office for the Steeplechase, and I'm depending on people going ahead and promoting that. And then we have in our club, we had people, and at the Steeplechase itself, you get premiums for how much money you raise. But if you have a job where you work in such a way that you can't go around to everyone you know and solicit fundraising, and you don't have the time to do that because you work really hard at whatever job you have. And I have a job where I help people all day. That's what I do. I'm penalized. I don't have a chance to participate in that level of fundraising because of my chosen line of work. So it penalizes people who have jobs and don't have the access to all those people that they can solicit.
Right. And then there's the people that do multiple rides a year.
Right.
And then they're going to have to go back and ask again for some more money. It's uncomfortable.
Right. You're hitting the same people up all the time.
You are.
And there's some companies that will match, you know, your sponsors.
Yes.
They'll match what you're going to donate. But, you know, all companies don't do that, and less do. So it makes it even more challenging to try to do all these different rides.
Well, that's a good rant. I like that one. But we're not going to leave it alone, because now we have one, and this is a sensitive one. Ooh, this one's sensitive. And I know it's sensitive because I am guilty of this, and also am all, you know, I understand. I see this. Cyclists who ride side by side with cars passing instead of riding in a single file. So I'm going to give you my perspective on this. One is that, you know, I kind of go by the Connecticut state law, where if you can see 200 feet to the front and to the rear and there's nothing coming either direction, then riding two abreast is okay. Okay, that's the Connecticut state law, just so you know. But I also will tell you that if I am on a ride or I am commanding a ride, which I often do, if someone says car back and you don't get over in 5 seconds or less, you deal with the wrath of Ron. And so I get that, but go ahead, go.
Is that screwdriver in the spoke?
Yeah.
Just checking.
No.
Just a push.
No, I won't say I'm verbally abusive, but I'm verbally convincing.
Nope. Verbally convincing.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
Somehow Fran doesn't see that completely the same. I have a funny feeling, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they have the whole 3 feet rule for the cyclist. You know, you get your 3 feet, but
correct.
You know, for me, when I'm driving down the road in my car, my truck, not in my on my bike, you know, it just nothing annoys me more when there's a couple guys or women, you know, they're riding side by side, shooting the breeze.
Yeah.
And they just don't get out of the way, and you got to go into the other lane to get around them.
Right.
When in all reality, when we're on a group ride, you know, we try to get out of the way typically. Sometimes, okay, you might not hear the guy. Oh, it's like in John's case, he's usually so far ahead.
You're right.
He doesn't
oh,
hear
is
us.
That it?
That's
it. Uh-huh. So he'll always be single file because he's out there on his own anyway. There you go.
I'm guilty riding, you know, side by side.
Yeah, I think we all are.
And I mean, that's a social aspect of riding, right?
Well, so it's part of the reason we ride our bikes.
Right.
You know, we're riding because we love to ride our bikes, and we love the people that we ride with, and the social interaction is. You know, by the time you get done with your conversation, you go, oh, gee, we just rode like 20 miles.
Yeah,
hey, exactly.
You know, you don't even realize it. Yeah, it takes the pain out.
Right. But now with electric cars, you don't hear them. They sneak up on you.
Well, this is something that we have talked about in the past on this show, and that is the the fact that we don't know cars are coming up behind us. Because, I mean, you guys have been riding for a couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So remember back, like I started seriously riding, I'm going to say, in the 70s. And you could hear the cars coming.
Sure.
I mean, it was
right,
pretty obvious.
Yep.
Plus, you know, none of us wore helmets, so we had that going on. and so anyway, there was that issue. So you could hear things. And now we wear helmets. There's straps that run down over the sides of your ears. There's the holes in the helmets to give you lots of ventilation so they're comfortable. And there's all this noise going by our ears, so we can't hear the cars coming up behind us. And, you know, I tell people who drive cars and trucks this all the time, just toot the horn, friendly-like. Don't wait until you're right behind me, because I don't want you to scare me out of my cycling shorts. I'm not real interested in that. But, you know, just give me a friendly reminder and let me know that you're back there, and we will get over. I mean, it's courtesy on both ends.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I think there's so much people in such a hurry. You know, they're going to work, they're going to wherever, taking the kids to sporting events or whatever. You know, they don't want to be bothered by people riding on the side of the road. And then when you start doing 2-3 across, you know, it really, really aggravates people. And I just don't think it's a good bonding experience between car and bike.
It's not good ambassadorship.
Although I did go to a cycling event directors conference about a year or so ago. It was very interesting. It was put on by bicycling.com. And their keynote speaker said to ride 2 abreast.
He really?
Said, in his opinion, that was the safest way to ride for the car, for the traffic. Because instead of having to pass a line of 30 cyclists riding single file, you're passing a line of 15 cyclists, so it's a shorter pass.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at
that
it.
That is an interesting way of looking at it. But then, you know,
I don't think I agree with that.
I don't.
I do a lot of SAG driving at events, and you know, at these fun rides, a lot of people don't move over. So I'm sagging these rides, and I can't get safely around these riders. Yeah. So,
well, I understand, and you know, I feel the same way. I just, you know, just get over it. It's not that hard. I mean, it's easy enough for us to do. And, you know, I explain this when I'm teaching people. I'm always teaching people about cycling. I'm teaching on group rides all the time. It's constant. I just can't keep my mouth shut. Oh, well, that's why I'm on the radio. So I tell people, this is really simple. If you're riding side by side with someone, okay, and you need to go into a single file situation, 3 hard pedal strokes and you're already a full bike length ahead of the other rider, and you don't put a huge gap in between, and everybody's happy. It works. Yep. So 3 strong pedal strokes and you're there.
Yep,
and
problem solved.
Whereas I see people that, you know, they hear car back and then they sprint like there's a, you know, $1 million on the line up ahead. And it's like, slow down, you know, don't do that. It drives me nuts. That could be a rant. That could be a rant some week. So anyway, yeah, riders, you know, this is a communication issue. You know, we're trying to portray ourselves as being responsible as riders. And so therefore, if we can be a little more responsible in this direction, maybe the people who are driving the cars and trucks will not be as irritated with us, which is that's
a good
way
thing.
It all works, right? Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, let's move on that one. And I'm gonna back up, because I need to ask the question that I ask everybody who is a guest on the show. And I'm gonna start with John, and I'm gonna ask you, John, if you can tell me what you remember as being your very first experience on a bicycle.
Okay. Well, my bike came probably from Benny's at the time. You know, it was a banana seat bike, sissy bar, the whole bit.
I had that.
Yeah. which I think everyone our age or so had those. One of the things I used to do all the time with my bike was tie my Tonka trucks behind it. I'd take a rope to the sissy bar.
Oh, my God.
And tow my Tonka trucks behind it.
Very nice.
My brother and I both did that. We'd go ripping around the, you know, road and try to get them tangled up. It was just a great time.
Oh, that's really,
you know,
funny.
And
that's great. Taking your Tonka trucks out for a drive.
Exactly. You know, that was pre-battery-powered, you know, toys.
Right.
So it was human-powered.
So it's kind of like you had a little train behind you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. I like it. That's good. You're the first one to come up with that answer.
Really?
Yes, yes. Oh. You now fall into one of the elite group of people that did not have the answer that will be the most common answer. But let me see what Pete has to say, and we'll see what see what level he falls into here.
Yeah, my level is a little off usually. I remember riding my bike, but one thing that stands out is I was pretty young. I was probably 9, 10 years old, and my parents had bought me a new bike, same kind, butterfly handlebars, had the banana seat and everything. Mm-hmm. It was a 3-speed.
Ooh,
that's a nice one.
Whoa. Oh, yeah.
With a stick shift or with a
stick shift?
Oh, wow.
Stick shift on the top tube. It was
awesome. You were one of the ones that we went, he's got one of those.
So, I got the bike. I got it for Christmas or whatever, and had to wait to ride it. So I finally got to start riding it. And so we lived on a lake. We lived locally. I grew up locally. And we lived on the end of the lake where the dam was. And the water was pretty deep there. So my friends and I decide, hey, let's build a ramp.
Oh,
get up
no.
top of that big hill, and we'll come down, and we'll jump off into the lake in the summer. So we did. So you come out, and you flew. I don't know. It seemed like a mile, but it's probably 15, 20 feet through the air, splash into the water. You have to swim down underneath, get your bike, drag it back out, do it again. So after about, maybe an hour doing that, I'm coming down the hill, and I look over, and my mother's standing there. And she is not happy.
Oh, no, not at all. And I know why.
Because who would think that, we lived about 100 yards from where we were doing this.
Sure.
She'd been watching us. And off I go. And, that was the last time I rode that bike for about a month.
Okay.
She was
well.
Mad. Her and my dad took the bike away and said, we paid a lot of money for that. Number one.
Don't go dumping into the lake. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So after a month, I got my bike back. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I did was got the ramp out, back down the hill, back into the water.
Oh, you're a troublemaker, aren't you?
Yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it.
Oh, I'm going to enjoy this day. This is good. I know why they're angry about it, because I had I owned a bicycle shop for 15 years. So we got to work on those bikes.
Yep.
And, you would pull them apart and the water would pour out of them. I mean, because the tubes would just fill up with water. And I know this because the local kids used to come to the shop and say, hey, we're going down there. There's a place they used to call it Lovers. And Lovers was on Lovers Lane in Wyndham Center. And it was a place where the motorcycles used to ride around a lot. So all the kids would go down there with the BMX bikes. And they made a ramp and they would drop off. And it's right on the edge of the Willimantic River. And so what they would do is they'd ride down, or I guess the Natchog River at that point, and they would ride down and they'd jump and they'd drop in. And, of course, I heard they were doing this, and I said, you guys, you're wrecking your bikes. You're just wrecking your bikes. So they'd come back from a day at Lovers doing the jumps into the water, and they'd come to the bike shop, and in the parking lot they'd have all their bikes taken apart, and they'd be draining them out. And, I'd give them grease and let them put things back together again, but... Yeah, it's not good for the bike.
Well, I think that set me up for later in life, because I do have pictures of people when I was mountain biking that they took of me doing water river crossings with my mountain bike. And you can only see from about the bottom of my shorts, my seat, and me, because the whole bike's underwater.
You just haven't changed a bit, have you?
Something about that water and a bicycle. And
oh, boy, oh, boy. Now, do you do your own work on your bike, or do you bring it to some poor soul to have them work on it for you?
It depends how lazy I am.
Okay.
If I'm feeling lazy, I use the excuse of I bring it to Talon Bike. I'm like, Steve, I'm really busy right now. I don't have time to do, to rewrap my handlebars.
So poor Steven has to deal with it.
Yeah. So,
okay.
And really, I was just riding down the sidewalk.
Just riding along.
And
right.
I don't know
just
how that
right,
fork got bent like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I know your type.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Those are great stories. You guys missed the top one. The top one, 80%, maybe 90% of the people say, well, I remember my dad running alongside the bike and then all of a sudden stepping out and saying, okay, you're going. And that's kind of the number one answer. So you guys avoided it both. This is great. This is great. So good answers, both of you. You both fall into a very elite list of people that did not have the same answer. So very, very good. So we're here for a few things. We're here, of course, to talk about bikes because that's what we do here. Boy, do we love to talk about bikes. That's what Bicycle Talk is all about. But we're also here because you guys are members of a club called NERAC Earth. And could you tell me a little bit about NERAC Earth?
Sure. Our club was founded in 2006. A number of us used to mountain bike race together, and we decided that, you know, it'd be nice to have a club. So we were all unaffiliated at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to work at NERAC, and the owner's a cycling enthusiast, too. So he was all on board with it. So he gave us the seed money to start the club.
Nice.
And that got us going, and we started working with the different people that we rode with. So our club grew from there. And then, you know, then interests change, and, you know, a number of us started road cycling, and, you know, we started doing charity events, and we thought we'd start giving back to the community and helping out at different events. So we started helping out at, like, bike rodeos and taking part in fundraisers. We avoided the big-ticket ones.
Yeah.
Again, we just couldn't raise that kind of money.
So hold that thought for a second.
Do we have a caller?
Yes, and he's Dutch.
And he's
Dutch. He wants to talk to you.
About the Dutch Reach?
Scott, are you with us?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Scott.
Hello. Hi, Scott.
Hello, guys. I am an American Yankee living in Amsterdam for 16 years now.
Okay.
And I'm a bicycle mechanic at the train station downtown.
Okay.
And we do rent a lot of bikes to Americans and tourists. And yeah, I have never experienced this Dutch Reach.
Okay, well, it's made the news here for some reason, and I'm not certain why, but they're calling it the Dutch Reach, and apparently it's something that is in the driver's manuals over there that encourages people to look before they open their doors into some unsuspecting cyclists as they're riding along. Does that make any sense? I mean,
oh, yes. The Dutch driving lessons are very intense over there.
Good. Maybe they should be here, too.
As a Connecticut driver, I have never got my license in 16 years there because it's crazy.
Really?
Bikers just take the right of way always, no matter what. Drunk, sober, with children, they just go.
Oh, my God. No, that's not good.
My Dutch.
That's okay. So anyway, the
Scott,
the cyclists,
no swearing.
The cyclists,
sorry.
The cyclists actually rule the road over there.
Oh yeah.
We just really, really love that idea. That would be so nice here. Unfortunately, here in the United States, we do not have that luxury. And the automobile is the grand old owner of the road, unfortunately. They think they are.
These hills are pretty big over here, so they're tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, well, thank you for your comment on the Dutch Reach. I do appreciate that. All right.
Bye.
Very good.
It was nice. Thanks for calling, Scott.
I should leave.
All right. Thanks for your input. Appreciate
it. Take care.
It. All right. Okay. Very good.
That's pretty funny. We've got an actual Dutch person.
Yeah, that's actually awesome. Very funny. Never heard of the Dutch Reach. Well, maybe it's something we made up here. Who knows? But whatever.
Apparently
here it is.
Maybe it's like he said. The Dutch are they're very serious about cyclists over there, and cyclists have the right of way. And if anybody's going to have a special way of forcing yourself to look for cyclists, it's going to be the Dutch because of how important cycling is over there.
And it's probably something they don't even realize is categorized as an item. They just do it naturally because that's how they're taught.
Right.
So that's cool. So back to NERAC Earth.
Yeah. So our club is, I'd call it a laid-back club. We're not a racing club. We do have racers in it, but our club is open to anyone. We welcome people to come ride with us, check us out. They like it. You know, come
great.
And, you know, join us.
You've been around for a while. How many years?
2006, so yeah, quite a few years.
Yeah,
it's
nice.
You know, and I've been riding for a long time. I rode as a kid. I grew up in Brooklyn, Connecticut. That was my transportation.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
You know, got used to the hills out there.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, there are hills out there.
Yeah.
There definitely
you
are.
You know, ride through Woodstock. And
have you been out there recently?
Yes, I have. It's totally different.
Have you been on Fitzgerald Road?
No. What'd they do to it?
They fixed the bridge.
Get out of here.
Get this. they didn't just fix the bridge, but the gentleman that owns the Post and Beam Building Company and his son, who both live on that road, they built a covered bridge on Fitzgerald Road.
Oh, nice.
Oh, it is so cool. And, you know, for years I went by that road and there was a sign that would say bridge out, bridge out. So you just never, you know, you figured, so the bridge is out. We'll just avoid the road. No big deal. And then one day I looked over and the sign was gone. And I went, oh, that's interesting. They must have finally finished this bridge. And I know that it goes through and comes out over on Cherry Hill. And it's kind of, you know, so it would be nice to take it. And I'm riding down the road and I come around the corner and I looked and there was this massive covered bridge. Beautiful. You can smell the timbers. We'll take you for a ride.
Yeah, I grew up on Stetson Road, so across the...
Oh, right
across
there.
The, right
you're right
across
there.
From Cherry Hill. So.
Sure.
That's where the naughty cow is.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. We have a cow story on Stetson Road.
On Stetson Road, yes.
And there's maple syrup on Stetson Road, too.
Yeah.
Nice. There was road with maple syrup on it is worth going on.
And there was a sawmill. I worked at a sawmill on that road, too, when I was a kid.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, so you grew up right there. Well, that's cool. So anyway, Nearec Earth, how many members did you say you had?
We have about 80.
Very
nice.
You
know, it fluctuates.
And it's open to others other than people that just work for Nearec, right?
Absolutely. It's open to anyone.
All right. You guys are always really nice and friendly and wonderful. And every time we've ever done one of your rides, we've been very impressed.
Oh, well, thank you. So that's awesome. What we try for that. You
know? Yeah. So we have a number of things here. But the one that's coming up soon is the Seven Lakes ride, which why don't you give me some history, mission, outcomes, info, anything you have on that? What do you have?
Sure. Oh, I got all kinds. How much time you got?
Oh, well, we do only have an hour. We have 30 minutes left. So
I was only able to do the Seven Lakes ride once only because I had the two subsequent years I had stuff going on. Well, I went with you to the Hudson Farm to Fork Fondo.
Right.
But the first year I was able to do it and it was wonderful. Such a beautiful ride. It's wicked hilly, but the roads were so great. One feature of that No, I was going to say it. Maybe that was on another ride. But yeah, it was a really beautiful ride. Very, very hilly, but really well worth doing. Went to some beautiful areas. I really loved going up 198 and into Massachusetts and crossing over. And you took us by the Holland Reservoir.
Right.
And that was really great.
Lakes,
So there you go.
So I'll bet Seven Lakes have something to do with the ride.
Well, I guess I'm done because she just pretty much stole my thunder.
Yeah, Fran did it all.
No, go ahead. What do you got?
Yes, excuse me. It does go, you know, it's, I'll start at the beginning. You know, I work at a cancer center. I treat cancer patients. And, you know, I see these people every day that, you know, their life changes so much when they get this diagnosis, whether they're young or old, you know, it doesn't matter. It's always seemed like it was the same thing going on. It was just so hard for people to have to come in every day. They can't work or they're retired. The medical bills are phenomenal. You know, insurance nowadays doesn't pay for everything anymore. Mm-hmm. So and there's so much extra medications you need and everything. And what kind of put me over the top was I was treating a man who was, we were the same age, exactly the same age. He was actually a month older than me. And he was a carpenter and he got lung cancer, didn't smoke or anything. And he lost his job because he just couldn't work anymore.
Right.
And so then in turn, it was like this domino effect. Lost his home, his car, had to move in with his father, was in his late 80s. And I just felt so bad for him. I thought, you know, somebody needs to step up and do something here. So I thought about it, and I thought, you know, maybe I could do one of these charity cycling events.
Mm-hmm.
And so I approached John and Nearec, the club, and we talked about it, and we were all on board with it. And that's really how the Seven Lakes ride started.
Nice.
And since then, you know, it's been this is our fifth year, and it's a challenging thing to do to put one of those together. So I thought, you know, I'm going to raise this money. I'm going to give people grants. No questions asked. So I have the social workers or the nurse navigators at work. You know, they come to me and they say, oh, you know, this patient needs a check. So I go to my locker and I get my checkbook and I write a check. It doesn't matter to me what they need it for, what they're going to use it for. If they need it, I'm going to give it to them. So I'm raising money for, you know, medications, food, gas. I've given money for home heating fuel, for nutritional supplements. For some patients can't eat anymore. They have to use a feeding tube, and that stuff is really expensive. And I have even gone as far as giving volunteer drivers gas cards to bring patients to their treatments and back, because, you know, things get expensive after a while.
Oh, they do.
So, you know, we've raised quite a bit of money over the past 4.5 years. I've given out about $29,700.
Wow.
For that.
That's great.
For patients.
Right.
I have about 92 people now we've helped. And, you know, I look for sponsors year round, and, you know, I have my volunteers. John's one of my biggest volunteers, does a ton of stuff, takes care of our website. You know, it's www.thesevenlakesride.com. Has all the info on there. He does all my registration setup, and, you know, I have volunteers for the rest stops, for, you know, the food, for SAG, sweep. It's amazing. It takes about, last year I had about 37 volunteers. That's pre, during, and after the event.
That's turning into a sizable event when you start having that many volunteers.
Right. Yeah, so we typically get, 140 to 150 cyclists a year for the event.
Okay. And it's okay, so we had that little rant earlier about fundraising. So is it required, or can you just come and do the ride?
You just come and do the ride. I charge the least amount.
We got to keep the mounts down.
The least amount that I can.
Okay.
Just to cover my expenses. I try to get everything donated. I try to get all the food for the rest stops donated. Mm-hmm. I actively seek corporate sponsors, private individual sponsors. And therefore, it keeps my costs really low. There are some things I have to buy, you know, paint for the roads. Oh, we don't paint the roads.
No,
somebody else
road.
Does.
Oh, yeah. No. Nobody paints
one
the road.
Year for defacing public property.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I don't even get me started. That would be another rant for another week.
Yeah, that's a good rant.
It's a different rant. Yeah. Oh, we, you know, with the steeplechase, you know, we use the special paint. We use, you know, we get permission from each town. I mean, it's insane what you have to go through now. Yeah. Whereas before, you know, back when I had my bike shop and we used to, I would put on a couple of rides a year. I just went out with my spray can the night before. And or 2 days before, or whatever it was, and painted everything up and left.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody ever said a word about it.
Yeah, but, no, we just got stopped one last year. And it was an interesting experience, you could say. Somebody was having a bad day.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, I try to keep my price really down to the bare minimum, because I want everybody to be able to come out and enjoy this ride. It's roads that I ride. I live in Stafford. I ride that area. I've lived there my whole life. I ride that area all the time. And
there's
some beautiful roads up there.
Oh, my God, yes.
I mean, John's been with
me. Yeah, low traffic.
Yeah, sometimes you ride a road, there's no cars go by.
Right.
So we can ride like six abreast.
Right. New City Road.
On both sides of the road.
New City Road.
You know New City Road, right?
Actually, that's one
of them. New City Road is sweet.
Yeah, we like New City.
It does go on all four of the rides do come down that road.
Oh,
nice.
Because it goes right next to the water.
And there's there's one direction to go on that road.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah. It goes down.
Because it slowly kind of works its way down, and it's just really a beautiful
And it does go
road.
Down on that.
Instead of the other way.
Yeah. So, you know, it's four loops. There's a 65-mile, a 45-mile, a 25-mile, and a 20-mile route as well. So I'm trying to cover
So is there a fundraising component to this if someone does want to raise money for your organization?
Yes, they can. On my website, there's all the sponsorship info is there.
Great.
If you're registering for the ride on Bike Reg, you can make a donation. This year, I'm trying a little different approach. I actually opened an online store through a company up in Massachusetts for jerseys, shorts, arm warmers. I was trying to sell jerseys myself, but you have to buy like ten of them, and it's a huge overhead. So this company approached me and said, hey, look, if you're interested, we're interested in you. We'll sell your stuff for you. You know, we'll give you a percentage of the sale.
Well,
so
that's cool.
They ship it. They do everything. So it's really, really easy.
Well, you have a neat logo and all. So that's probably pretty nice little jersey to have.
Yeah. I designed those jerseys and with a little help from a friend of mine and the logo and everything. So we're really a grassroots kind of a organization going here.
Right. And so it's the Seven Lakes Ride, all one word, .wordpress.com. Is that correct?
Or you can just do sevenlakesride.com.
Or you can do sevenlakesride.com. Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Very, very cool.
So, yeah, we're June 25th this year. So.
Okay. Good. Yeah, this is really nice. Yeah, you've got lots of information here on the website. So it's That's really wonderful. Now, you stagger your starts, I see.
Yes,
so.
we originally did a mass start, but, you know, they're so dangerous. Mm-hmm. To let, you know, 50, 60, 80 riders go out into a group onto a main road. And then you have so many cyclists at different abilities doing these rides that you might be doing a 65-mile ride that you've been biking for, you know, 15, 20 years on the road. But then you might have somebody who just started road biking who might have been like a mountain biker or something who's not really as confident, you know, with the skinny tire bike. And
sure,
you can really run into some problems there. So we decided that you just come in, you register or pre-register, you just check in, and we ask you to just, you know, wait to the official start time, take off, because the, you know, you need to be able to get to the rest stop, you know, after it's open is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And the whole time it's fully supported. So
sure. Sure.
Yeah.
So, and you do this through USA Cycling, so it's permitted. Yes. Permitted event. That's
absolutely
great. Good. Yep. Excellent. Excellent. Very, very nice. And your registration opens at 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. So you've got open registration there, or they can pre-register. Just go to the website. You can
So 65-miler starts the earliest, as that's the longest ride. And try to get everybody back around the same kind of the same time frame for, you know, we do try to get a lunch every year.
Yeah,
I'm still waiting for my official word from Subway that they're going to give me my 150 grinders this year.
So that would be nice.
Yeah,
That's
hopefully, you know, in the next week or two, I'll know.
is something for anybody who's out there listening, who either works for one of these organizations or has thought about this as far as the potential goes. You know, if you sponsor a ride like this. There's one thing that's very, very common about cyclists. We all have in common. We all love to eat.
Yep.
Yes.
So people who own restaurants or food businesses, pay attention, because this is a great way to reach people that will probably come back and consume an awful lot more of your product.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
little plug there, a little bit of a call to action, but not, we're gonna move on that one. Yeah. So anyway, you've got some links here to all these beautiful pictures, and it's just, this is really cool. This is very, very cool. So what else do I have on my list here from you guys as far as this ride goes? So do you participate in other charity rides as a group?
Yeah, we do a number of them. We do the Tour de Mansfield, like that one.
Which is coming up in a week and a half.
Yeah, that's coming up real soon. Mm-hmm. The Steeplechase, of course.
Right.
Very good. We'll go across that bridge, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, we do some other ones. We like to go to the Seacoast Century. We've been going to that. The Flattest Century. The TCC Century, too.
Right. That'll be at the end of July this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a great event, too.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And there's going to be, a few changes, one being the date change on that. But that's definitely coming up, too.
And the new venue is great. I mean,
you like the one out of Chapel?
Garrison Park.
Yeah, Garrison Park is really nice.
Plenty of parking. And
sure.
And the pavilion there, it's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's a good spot. It's definitely a good spot. Let's see, what else we have here? Charity rides that you organize. You do others besides
one.
This one.
Yeah, we do have another one. It was the Ashford Metric Century. It was a road ride. We did it out of the Ashford Elementary School.
Right.
And again, another pretty ride.
Good potatoes at the end.
Oh, yeah. It had baked potatoes, apple
and
crisp.
Apple crisp. Yeah. Yes.
And ice cream, right?
So yeah.
How could you go wrong with that? We like to eat. it went through beautiful parts of the state, you know, the quiet corner there. This year, we're changing it, though. It used to take place in October. It's kind of cold. A lot of times, the weather didn't cooperate.
Yeah, that can happen.
The weather wouldn't cooperate. So we're going to change it to a gravel grinder this year. Do something a little different.
I am so excited. That's a great idea.
Am I going to be able to do this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, buy a gravel bike.
Yeah, it's in September.
She has one.
It's in September 16th.
She doesn't have to worry about that.
Well, it depends on the date. September 16th?
Yeah, it's a Saturday.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that.
And it'll start in there's a little park in Ashford off 44. Yeah. We're going to start it there.
Okay.
It'll be more of an adventure now because now, you know, you'll use your GPS to navigate it.
Okay.
Not everything will be marked as clearly as the Ashford road ride was.
Okay.
It'll be mixed terrain. There will be some paved roads. We're still working on the route. It's not finalized, but they will be metric century.
Oh, there are some great roads up there.
Yeah, lots of dirt roads. I hear it's like the most dirt roads.
It's about 40% dirt right
now.
Yeah. So it's going to be it's about 40%.
Yeah. Oh, I'm interested in talking to you guys about this afterwards, because this is I love dirt roads. Boy, do I love dirt roads.
Yeah. It's really fun.
On my birthday ride, we went down Boston Hollow Road. You guys must know Boston Hollow Road. Yep. That's just a beauty. Mm-hmm. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. So again, this is another low cost charity ride. We mm-hmm. we keep the costs low. Our expenses are low. We want people to participate. We really want people out on their bikes. You know, if we could raise money at the same time, that's the bonus. And this will raise money for a couple of different charities. One is for the same charity for the Seven Lakes ride. It'll mm-hmm. go there. So people mm-hmm. can pick what they want to donate their entry fee to.
Okay.
So one of the John DeQuatro Cancer Center. The other one is the Interval House East, which... they work with families affected by domestic violence.
Wow.
So that's
that's interesting.
And it's in this area. It covers mm-hmm. Vernon, Tallinn, Ellington, Hebron, Manchester, Glastonbury, East Hartford, South Windsor. You know that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of local. We want to keep it local.
Good.
And the other one is Our Companions Animal Sanctuary in Ashford, too. So there's three different charities. So we're changing it up a bit. And people get a choice. They could say where they want their money to go, go towards.
You know, what I love about these local events is that, we don't have huge administrative fees that are going to some national organization. And, not to pick on the Dana-Farber guys, but, there's a lot of administrative costs that goes into that. I'm certain.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And that every dollar that you are kind enough to give to a ride or an event like this, you know that it's actually going directly to the causes, which is great. That's the way it should be.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And all we really want to do is ride our bikes. So we get to ride our bikes and feel good about helping people out at the same time. So. It's a good thing. Yeah. It's a really good thing.
It really is.
I just want to clarify one thing about that Ashford metric. So there's going to be a metric, so 65 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That one has, I think, about 4,500 feet of climbing.
Yep.
And it'll be GPX file. So, most of the adventure gravel rides, people are running a, GPS unit.
Yep.
But then we're going to do a 33.5 mile ride as well.
Okay.
That one's about 2,200 feet of climbing. Which also will be a GPS file. But we are going to offer guided rides with that too. Two different levels. We're talking about two different levels right now. So maybe like a 12, 13, 14 mile an hour average, and then maybe a fun ride of like a 8-9 mile an average. Mile
nice.
An hour average. So for those people who don't have a GPS, don't want to go spend, $400 or $500 whatever
right.
to buy one.
Yeah, they can be pricey,
Try it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're trying to, incorporate enough in there so we can get everybody to come out on their bikes and whether you have a mountain bike
right.
or a cross bike or a gravel bike,
nice.
A fat bike, whichever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good. We don't have the famous ride that is in New England that a lot of people know about is the D2R2.
Yes.
Which is unfortunately the same time as the steeplechase. So I have been unable to do it over all these years because it's always the same day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like 70% dirt road, I
yes.
think is what
yep.
that is.
Yep.
And just ridiculous amounts of climbing, like really painful amounts of climbing.
Yeah. Some of those ones there. Up 6,000-7,000 feet of climbing in a ride, and that's getting there.
I believe that they actually hit the 12,000.
Oh, did they?
Wow. Yeah, yeah. They. I mean, you're going up or down, and there's a there is a very famous road that's real close to a covered bridge that apparently has a 23% grade on it.
Wow.
Yeah, on gravel.
Wow. Yeah.
So there are very few that make it. But
I'm not going to be one of them.
Yeah. It's a tough one. But we'd rather see the steeplechase anyway. But anyway,
right.
That's another story. So that's exciting because I don't know that I don't really know of any gravel grinder rides here in Connecticut at this time. You guys might be the first one.
And that was the thought behind it, to do something a little different.
Well, I've been talking about, putting together a ride. I was exploring some roads a couple of weeks ago out in Lebanon. There's a bunch of dirt roads in Lebanon, which I just, you forget that they even exist.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they're there, and they're really interesting, and they're nice and quiet, and, you know, I just, there's a certain, I have a certain attraction to those dirt roads. I love the dirt roads. I think they're great. We have a ride every year that goes up and goes to see the mountain laurels when they're in full bloom, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. Yep. We'll have the mountain laurels will be open. We'll go up to the sanctuary. And then we come down Kenny Hollow Road.
Yep.
And Kenny Hollow Road is, it's one of the top 10 reasons why you ride a bike. I mean, it's just really, that is a fun road. If you like roads and you really love to ride your bike, then that road is special. And I found that by accident the first time. Because I was out riding my bike a ridiculous amount. I was racing my bike, was training, I needed miles. I start riding and I end up in I go, well, I wonder where this goes. You know, it goes by a school at the top. Well, I'm in civilization. It can't be that bad. And then it drops and drops, drops. And drops and drops and drops and drops and drops. Uh-huh. And then, you know, the road gets a little narrower and then the road just turns to dirt.
Turns to dirt.
And right. At that point I thought, well, I'm not climbing back up that hill because that's a big hill.
Yes,
and I just found out where it went. I remember getting back and I was living with two other bicycle racers at the time. And I got back and said, I got a ride to take you guys on. You're not going to believe this. You're just not going to believe it. And, you know, we were so anal about it that we had the government topographical maps, right? The geo maps.
Yep.
We had them all taped together on one of the walls in our apartment. So we could, you know, and I'd say, it was right up here and over there. I didn't know that went through. Oh, yeah, it goes through. It's really cool.
There's some nice riding up in there.
Oh, it's beautiful riding up in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if you get off on some of the trails in Bigelow Hollow,
yep,
you can connect to some dirt roads that I don't, you know, I finally got lost up there one day. I was just riding along, and I finally flagged down a couple of guys on dirt bikes, motorcycles. And I said, yeah, I need to find my way over to such and such a place. And they went, on that? I went, yeah. And they said, well, you'll never get through there on that. And of course, that you never don't ever tell me I can't get anywhere with my bicycle, you know, I can be stopped. So I did it anyway because I had to. But then they asked me where I started, and I said over in the park. They went, the park, and I said, yeah, Bigelow Hollow. And they went, you're like 10 miles from there. And I went, okay. And they said, you got out. You're on. You know, they were amazed that I was actually riding my bike out there. And they said, you're in Southbridge, Massachusetts. And I went, okay, that's cool. But I don't want to be in Southbridge. I want to be back there. So they gave me directions back. But the road network back there, that it and it's very rideable.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It gets a little more intense back in Bigelow Hollow.
Yeah, I've been mountain biking there. Yeah. We've gotten lost there, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's all the fire roads back there that are they're pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a fire road that somebody told me about that he said it's passable. That's always a questionable description. But there's one that goes from very close to the entrance to Bigelow Hollow. Mm-hmm. It's across the street from the entrance, and it'll bring you over to Kenny Hollow Road.
Yes. Mm. Yep.
Do you know that one?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Oh, we need to go for a ride. Yeah, this is exciting.
That's how I used to mountain bike up there all the time. That was my, I lived up that way.
That's
so.
Your stomping ground.
Yeah, that's my stomping ground.
Were you there with the Tinty brothers?
I know the Tinty brothers.
They,
yes, I do.
They know that place like the back
yes,
of their
they
hand.
Do.
They really know their way around up there.
Yep.
And yeah.
They both live up in that area as well.
Yeah,
so.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Yeah. Yeah. They used to hang out at my bike shop back in the day. So long, long time ago. But yeah, they'll always take you on a good adventure.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun. Fun guys. So anyway, I guess we've kind of covered the Nearac Earth thing. If people want to find you again, your website is
NearacEarth.com.
Okay. All right. And then you can link into any of the things that you're doing.
Yeah. And like I said, our club's open to anyone. So if you're interested, shoot us an email.
Mm-hmm.
We also send out a weekly ride email too. So you can sign up for our ride email list, and there's a link there also.
Oh, nice. Nice. Well, we might have to link into that. That'd be kind of nice to get on your list. That'd
yeah.
be fun. Maybe we'll have to join your club at some point here, too. I noticed that that seems fairly reasonable.
Yeah.
And I know that there are members from other clubs that belong to your club also.
Yeah, which is kind of normal in the cycling community, right?
Yeah.
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 Well, it's a small world that we live in here, but that's really good. And you are encouraging new members?
Absolutely.
Are you okay with that?
We do like new members, and you know, and of all levels. You know, we
sure.
You know, getting new people out on bikes is a great thing,
isn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing and how fast people progress.
I know.
We've been talking about starting some beginner rides. You know, we're friendly with Tomlin Bike Shop, and you know, people go in there and buy bikes. They buy a road bike or whatever, and we've been talking about starting some absolute beginner road bike rides. You buy your road bike, you know, and we're going to put some info down there at the shop, and you know, come on out, and we'll get you going, teach you how to ride safely on the road, how to ride in a group, you know, mm-hmm. the hand signals, the lingo, the everything.
It's so important. And, yeah. and you know, we the club that we're affiliated with has a number of different rides on Saturday mornings. Mm-hmm. We have everywhere, starting from a beginner ride, which is simply a, you know, maybe this doesn't sound beginner for some people, but 10 miles at 10 yeah. miles an hour.
Yep, you know? Right.
So it's not a fast ride at all. And it's...
And it's really the pace of the slowest rider.
It really is the pace of the slowest
rider. 10 is just a number that they kind of throw out there, but whatever people are riding it, they take care of them.
And they usually use the same loop. There's about three different loops that they can use, but mm-hmm. they usually use one that's the kindest and most forgiving of northeastern Connecticut, which mm-hmm. is hard to find, but it's a good way to get people started. Yeah. And then from there, we go up to an actual sea level ride, but now we're having some discussion about having something in between that, because mm-hmm. there's people that are very capable of the speed, but not of the distance right. of the next ride up. And so we're talking about some sort of an intermediate and advanced beginner ride now because of it. And that's what you have to do, because we just want to get people excited about being on their bikes
right.
as much as we are.
And we want to do the same for mountain bikes, too. We want to have a beginner mountain bike ride, too.
That would be good.
Because, you know, with mountain biking, you see someone else do it, then you think you can do it, you know?
Oh, I know.
It's, hey, they went over that log. I can do that.
That's so easy.
Yeah, no.
but it's good to see someone actually doing it.
Right.
The trick is to go over and end up on your wheels.
Well,
on your tires,
rubber side down.
Yeah. Yes. The ground's soft. That's no road rash.
Right, right.
I think the challenge with the beginner rides, although we're trying to start them, is to get the instructor riders to get back to that level of beginner.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a tendency, you know, you're poking along. Well, you're starting off.
Oh, boy,
you know,
we could talk.
Yeah. 10 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden the guy is cranking out at 18, 20, 24 miles an hour. And,
right.
You know,
and the effort required on a mountain bike is a lot different than on a road bike.
Right.
Yeah.
So. I encourage our upper-level riders to lead a beginning ride as much as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. At least once a year, you should at least get out, get back, and take a look and see. Because, you know, it'll bring you back to your roots, you know, because we all started somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And it just reminds you that, you know, just because someone is not going at the same level or speed or a level of expertise as you do, they still love to ride their bike as much as you do.
That's why they're out there.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. Just this past weekend, I volunteered to sweep the Bike MS route.
Oh, did
you?
So I
was out there, and I did it with my daughter, my 15-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And, we took the 10-mile loop. So,
okay.
You know, you're out there with riders that definitely ride at a different level, but they're having a great time, you know?
Exactly.
And you just have to ride differently. And you see they're having fun. And And it's great to just see people out on their bikes doing this.
I know it is. I did the Ride of Silence in West Hartford. And 60 people showed up to the Ride of Silence. That's very cool.
Right.
And it was, but every level you could possibly imagine, you know, showed up. And you know, I ended up helping them sweep because I can't not help. It's just kind of a thing that I've been doing now for so many years that I can't leave it alone. So I was helping some of the people at the back of a group, and you know, encouraging them and keeping them going. But you know, you're looking, you don't realize that little hump that you have no trouble getting over is a mountain for some people.
Right.
You know, you reach a different level of appreciation when you do that.
So while John was sweeping the 10-mile, I was sweeping the 25-mile MS ride with his son, was my sweep partner.
Nice.
And we got towards the end, and there was a lady who was struggling, a young girl who was struggling. You know, she was having a tough time.
Yeah.
And she was averaging about 6 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So I told, you know, Nathan, John's son, I said, I'm just going to buzz up there because I don't like to ride right on their back tire.
Right.
Give them some space. And I said, I'm going to go up and just chat with her. It kind of, maybe it'll help her these last few climbs.
Yeah.
So I go up there, I start chatting with her. And she was struggling.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize it, but I'm just blah, 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 blah into her, you know. Right. And all of a sudden she looks over and she's like, I hate you. And then I realized she's dying and I'm not breathing hard.
Yeah,
right,
you know.
Like, okay, well, I'm going to give you a little space now.
It comes with time. It really does, you know. So, you know, you just if you're out there and you're new and you're listening to this and you're concerned about it, you know, just give it time. Yeah. You know, time.
We've all been there.
Yeah. We've all been there. Yeah. And we've all been on that ride where, you know, we started on a ride which we probably shouldn't have gone out on. And, you know, you're getting with maybe 15 or 20 miles to go and you realize that the gas tank's empty. You're done, and then you have to suffer your way back in. We've been there too, so we've all paid our dues. Hey, you guys, we're gonna have to wrap it up here because we just ate up a perfectly good hour. Hopefully, everyone was entertained by this. I want to just one more time. My guests today were John Satter and Peter Lavallee from the Nurek Earth Cycling Club. Their event, which is coming up very soon, is the Seven Lakes Ride. You can find it online. You can find it at their website, and their website is nurekearth.com. Right. So please support this ride. This is a very good thing. The money goes to a very good cause. So and you get to ride your bike. So this is a wonderful thing. So anyway, I thank you very much for coming in today, you guys.
Thank you for having us.
This is really good. So moving on here. My name is Pedlin Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can reach me by sending an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com or visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. And remember, you can also hear the podcast of this show and others on whus.org and also on iTunes. This is Pedaling Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.